Welcome to the Apartment Rockstar Podcast, and on this episode, Robert Martinez is a guest on John Busuay's The Dreamcatcher Show. Continue your real estate education journey and hear about how to move from just chasing your dreams to actually catching them.
Welcome to another episode of The Dreamcatcher Show, Dreamcatchers. I am so excited to have our next guest on the show, so I need you to do me a favor. I need you to grab a pen and a piece of paper because you're going to want to take some notes. You're going to get so much value out of today's show. Guys, today we have, let me just put it this way. We have someone that's been called the apartment rock star, a two-time national owner of the year, has over 3,762 units. He's the CEO of Rockstar Capital. He's been featured on Forbes, Entrepreneur, Money, and CNBC. Guys, I am so excited to bring Robert to the show. Robert, thank you for jumping on with us.
Hey, it's Robert Martinez, the apartment rock star of Rockstar Capital on the Dreamcatcher Show with John Bourgeois. I'm excited to be here.
Dude, I am stoked to have you on the show. And I know a little bit of your story, right? But let's jump into things. Let's go ahead and let our dream catchers in. Like, for you, where did this all begin? What was it like growing up for you?
You know, I grew up in a very solid middle class environment. My father worked in the fast food industry, worked for about 40 plus years. My mother worked at Levi's and later Hager's and then later for the school district when her job went down south to Mexico. And so, you know, really for us, the way to take your life to the next level was education. You know, my parents stressed education. It was very important to go to school and get good grades so that you could eventually get a job. But that's the education that they knew. That's the story that they were told. They did it to the best of their ability, but they were damn sure to make sure their kids were going to take it to the next level. And that's what it was. I think it took until later becoming an adult, actually living the dream, living life where you realize and you make your own choices in where you go in life. And I think that's what happened with me.
And where exactly did you guys grow up at? You're based out of Texas,
Yeah, correct? I grew up in deep South Texas, what's known as the Rio Grande Valley. My mom and dad's house was literally 20 minutes from the border of Mexico, which sounds really close. It's really not when you look at everything. It's actually quite a lot of distance. But yeah, I grew up really close to down south.
Okay, very cool. And did you originally, like, had you always dreamed about getting into apartments, real estate? Like, how did that come about?
You know, I didn't know a single person that owned real estate growing up. I did not know. And if my mom and dad did not teach me that, they didn't know anybody. But you did hear the horror stories. Oh, real estate's risky. You know, and I guess the biggest one was like maybe Donald Trump growing up, right? That you hear about all the money he made and how he lost it. You know, real estate's risky. It's cyclical. There's a lot of pitfalls. And, you know, it's not really true. Real estate is actually very, very lucrative. More millionaires in this country have been made from real estate. And if you look at the Forbes list, right, who are you going to see on there? You're going to see tech giants, right? You're going to see guys that maybe now own, you know, global media companies. And you're going to see the real estate investor on there that made his money. And so I really, really was very blessed and fortunate to fall into real estate. But, you know, to answer your original question, no, I didn't. I was not born into this. My mom and dad don't know this. This wasn't anything that was taught to me or taught to them. It was self-learned.
So for you then, as a kid, what did you envision? When I grow up, I'm going to be X. Like, what was that X?
Yeah, X was going to be an attorney. I really enjoy speaking.
Okay.
I was going to be an attorney because that's what made a lot of money.
Okay,
you know?
Gotcha.
And after being in school and realizing, wow, it takes a lot of focus to be an attorney, and meaning like I have a little bit of ADD. I get a little
same here.
Especially as an adult, it's come out really bad. I realized here in college that wasn't going to work for me. I couldn't sit there and study all day, but I was really good with numbers, so I have an engineering degree. You know, and I graduated Texas A&M University in 1997 with an engineering degree, and I was going to go and move to Houston. So I went from South Texas to up in College Station, Texas, where Texas A&M is at. I moved to Houston for my first job. in 1997, and I began a career in sales, a career in sales focus around engineering. And, you know, I would sell million-dollar pieces of equipment to guys with PhDs. And I would go through the whole sales process, tell them the unique value proposition my company was offering, the life benefit analysis of the actual equipment. And that's how I got my start. Okay. Nothing to do with real estate.
Okay. So, and at that point, obviously you graduate with an engineering degree. So were your parents, did your parents also want you to be the lawyer, or they just wanted you to go to school and get a college degree?
Yeah, I was the first one in my family to go to college. So that's for sure, the main focus was they wanted to see their children go to college, do something different than they did, and come home with that diploma. It didn't really matter what the degree was in, actually, just come home with that diploma. Obviously, what do you do? You get conditioned to choose the high-end degrees. You get conditioned to choose the high-paying degrees, you know.
Yeah, because they're the safer jobs. That's quote-unquote, they're the safer jobs.
Well, and that's what it is, jobs, right? That's ultimately what it is a job. Yep. And so you go after the higher paying jobs, and you start first with a doctor and like, okay, can I be a doctor? And you're like, I don't know if I have the grades or not, or maybe the wherewithal to become that. So you go to the next level, and that's where you see the attorneys. That's where you see the engineers. You know, you don't really think about being a school teacher because they're on the lower end of the pay scale. You know, you don't really even think about sales. I didn't know anybody in sales growing up. The only salesmen I got associated with were the ones that would come door to door trying to sell you encyclopedias, trying to sell you vacuum cleaners, you know. And I remember when I was telling my mom and my dad that I was going to join a sales career, they're like, wait, what? You went to college to be a salesman? And that's how they saw it. You know, they had no idea of what technical sales was. And as I look back and I come to this epiphany as I'm on your show, you know, it's amazing how your ideas and your life get put into you by your upbringing. You know, so in reality, that was a step up from what my parents were doing, but they didn't think that, you know, they didn't believe that, you know, being a sales guy was a true career, or it was going to be all commission based and it was going to be, you know, hard to make your money and anything. But in reality, it was the best decision I ever made in my life, because I think sales is life. You have to be able to present yourself. You have to be able to speak. You have those that come up and stand in front of an audience, stand in front of a group and aren't afraid of speaking, are the ones that end up on top, you know. And it's, unless you're going to be the weird, you know, techie, you know, giant, you know, like a Bill Gates, or who's socially awkward, or maybe like the Facebook guy Zuckerman, you know, you need to learn how to speak. And I think having a good voice, being able to communicate your thoughts, being able to understand words and communicate what you want to somebody else is the key to life. Because communication is the key to life. And the people who communicate the best are the sales guys. I mean, y'all know Grant Cardone, right? He's one of the best communicators out there. And he's made his whole life as a sales guy.
Yep. And I will let you know, I'm reading an amazing book by Darren Hardy right now, right? And it's called The Entrepreneur Roller Coaster. It is a phenomenal book. But what he says in that book is, he goes, listen, you can have the best product. You can be Bill Gates. You can be Jeff Bezos. You can be any of those big gurus and have the best product, best company, everything like that. But what makes that company go round? Sales.
Sales.
And if you want a healthy company, you have to have healthy sales. And if
you don't have salesmen.
Exactly. But if you don't have sales, you don't have a company.
John, do you know why though? It's because sales generate income, and income is offensive power. So the more income you make, the more options you have. If you don't have income, what do? You have to cut. You have to cut your expenses. You have to cut different things that you're doing, you know, and that's not good for your business. You know, that's why Grant Cardone, we talked about stay on offense, stay on offense. Don't worry. Don't worry about defense. Stay offense. And you look at, if you're a basketball fan, or if you're a football fan, you see that some teams really don't know how to play defense. They just score. Yep. They're going to outscore you. You know, the NFL teams that have some of the worst defensive rankings have some of the best offensive rankings, and they just believe that they're going to stop you just enough, but they're never going to worry about it because they're on offense. Offense gives you options.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So you've got to tell me, though, how you went from selling in 97 as an engineer to getting into apartments, real estate, all of that. How did that happen?
Okay, so corporate America happened. You know, you realize that the game in corporate America is not for this, is not for the W-2 employee.
Nope.
It's for the owner. That's just how it is. I mean, they did the risk. They have the reward. The W-2 earner there is to make that dream happen. is to help them get their goals across. And I don't mind saying that. I've got staff from me right now. I mean, you got to hear it. And it's okay. Not everybody's built to be an entrepreneur. I get that. But those that are, maybe hearing me will push them out to the next level.
Explain that though yeah. for me, just because I want to hear your thoughts on it. Why would you say that not everybody is built to be an entrepreneur?
Because it takes a lot of risk. Mm-hmm. It takes a lot of risk, and not everybody's willing to do that. What happened mm-hmm. to me was that I realized that what was getting in the way of a great life was a good life.
Mm. You know, say that. No. Yeah. You can't. Don't go by that quickly. Say that one more time. What was getting in the way of a great life for you?
What gets in the way of a great life is a good life. And when a good life to me was making six figures, I was making $130,000, $140,000 a year. But what was happening in corporate America was that my bosses were playing with my commission plan because I should be making $180,000 to $200,000. Mm. But corporate America wants you making here. And you have to have enough confidence and wherewithal that you want to live here. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, and to live there, it means you got to take some risks. It means you got to take some challenges that you're not even sure what they are. But you want to live there. So come hell or high water, you're going to get there. And that's why I don't think everybody has it in them to be a true entrepreneur, because entrepreneur is all risk. All risk. And, you know, right now we're going through this coronavirus. We're going through everything, right? But you have to have the wherewithal that no matter what, I'm going to take care of my staff, because I'm going to know my staff is going to remember this when this is over. They're going to know how you take care of them. They're going to know what sacrifices you take. And so that's where we're at right now. I've guaranteed my staff complete employment. I'm going to make sure that they, in fact, on top of it, we're bonusing them right now because it's a really important time for them to know. I know they're having extra grocery bills and they have extra unforeseen expenses, right? You know, I'm going to make sure that I'm there because, again, I believe that they will remember that on the other side. But that's the risk in it. Are you willing to take less yourself so your staff can take more? You know, it's all about risk. Are you willing to walk away from a six-figure income to pursue a career in real estate where you're making $36,000 a year when you're walking away from $140,000?
Yeah, what made you make that decision? Like, did you bump into somebody that was doing really well in real estate, or
I've learned that education is everything. So communication is the key to life, but so is education. You got to expose yourself to things, right? Because mom and dad, you are basically the newer 2.0 version of mom and dad. And you think like them, you act like them, you have their mannerisms, you even look like them. Well, you're going to have the same thought process as them until something comes in that changes that equation for you. And so if you want to change in your life, first you got to have a stimulus. My stimulus, my catalyst was the disparity going on at work that I should have been making here, but my boss kept me here, right? Mm. Then that forces you to act. That forces you to change. And I started looking around at a way to try to find that missing income. And I thought, okay, I'm going to open up a business. Okay, do I want to be a Subway franchise owner? No, I don't really want to do that. Do I want to open up a water vending business, a laundromat? Maybe. You know, I got really close at a laundromat. I bought a book and I studied all the time and I was understanding the equations. And there's actually a science behind making money at a laundromat.
Really? I didn't know that at all.
Oh yeah, the water usage coming in, having the high efficiency units that use less water, less power is where you make your money. But the problem with owning a laundromat is that if you don't own a real estate, the landlord does, right? Then he can raise your rent at any time. So you really don't have control. What happened to me is I fell into real estate because one day I heard a guy on the radio. And I heard it over off and off for 2 years. And he talked about single family houses. He talked about multifamily apartments. And I was going to go there and buy real estate. I was going to join his club. And I did. I paid $10,000, which was a ton of money to me back in 2007. And I remember thinking,
wow. Oh, no. Hold up. You got into the real estate game in 2007?
Best decision that I ever made in my life.
I can't wait to have this conversation. This is okay. Best decision. Okay, well, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, so I apologize.
No. This is great. I joined in January of 2007, and I spent all my time watching the videos, attending the live networking events. My sales background helped me to shake hands and kiss babies, right? Network with people that are doing what I want to do.
Yeah.
You know, and learn from them. And one of the things that I really enjoyed the most is that club had a Friday bus road trip. You would get on the bus, part of your membership. You would get on a bus one Friday every month, and you would get to go to members' assets. And when I did that, I was like, wow, okay, you can ask questions from people who are where you want to be.
Wow, that is amazing.
That's what I got. And that's how I fell into real estate. So I joined in 07, January of 07. I studied all year long and I got into my first asset in December of 07. It was a 239 unit apartment complex on the north side of Houston. And, you know, because I learned all this, I understood the basics of property management. Now it was time to apply it. And when I got into that room, I'm watching how people were leasing apartments. These young ladies, you know, that were anywhere from 18 to 25 years old are sitting here in these desks and they're trying to lease an apartment complex to a guy making $36,000 to $40,000 a year. And they're doing it all wrong. And you know, why do I know that? Because I've been professionally trained. I can sell $1 million piece of equipment to a guy with a PhD. Sterling, I can lease a $600 a month apartment to a guy making $36,000, $40,000 a year. And they were doing it. It's the same principles. And once I showed them how to do that, just like I used to show myself, and I was basically a sales manager. I had a territory. I would teach the people that were selling my product or selling directly to the end user how to sell. Business started to come in. Leases started
of
to
course.
Happen. Then, of course, you got to take care of them. You got to return them. You got to renew them, right? So you have to take care of them along the way because all the money you make in real estate doesn't happen when they move in. It happens when they renew. And the reason why that is when people move in, you have vacancy loss, you got marketing costs, you got commissions, you have the expense, what we call the make ready expense to get the unit rent ready. When they renew, what happens? They take a rent bump.
Yep.
You take a $30 to $50 rent bump and you spend $0 to get that unit ready.
You didn't have to advertise to them. You didn't have to pay somebody a commission to get in. None of that
You've
stuff.
You've been advertising to them all year long based on your customer service. Yes. What was the impression? You know, how was the unit made ready? Was it to a high standard, or were there a lot of phone calls back to maintenance that have to come in? You know, you only get one chance to make a first impression, and then you got to cultivate that impression throughout the year. And so, when you get a renewal after 12 months or whatever, it's a compliment to you and your business that hey, I like living here because nobody wants to move, right? Nobody wants to move. You move because you have to. Something makes you move, and if it's not the external forces, like I need to get closer to my job. Or there's something related to my family, then you move because you're dissatisfied.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's very similar to an employee moving from a company. They say that an employee moves from a company not because of the company, but because of their boss.
Because of the boss. And if the boss is there to take care of them. So again, back to communication. You know, I try to have a communicative conversation with my team as often as I can. Because it's my job to find out what's important to them. And if I can find out what's important to them, then I can, because of my education and my knowledge, I can help give it to them. I've helped people buy their first car. I've helped them buy their first house, all because I introduced them to the right people. Or if they're in debt, we sat down together and we came up with a debt reduction strategy. And sometimes that's a little painful, right? Because you have to, they have to unlearn things that they've learned. They've got to learn to save, right? But then you save, and then you're ready to go on offense. You pay off that debt, or you save and you're ready to issue that down payment. And guess what happens when you help somebody? They want to help you back.
Absolutely.
Because you've invested in them, they now want to help you with whatever your goals are. And I think that's been the secret sauce to our business, is that they've seen that I've gone out of my way to help them out in whatever pursuit that they had or whatever goal that they had. And they now want to return that favor. So they listen, like, okay, he wants it done this way. Okay, he wants it in this way. Or I'm going to work those extra hours. Oh, well, during the coronavirus, he was there and gave everybody a $250 bonus. Hey, he guaranteed everybody's pay. No matter what happens, even if I'm taking less, and I'm going to take less the next 2 months until this passes, but my team will be there and they'll get what they need to get.
That's awesome. Robert, I want to jump back to 2007 a little bit, right? And the reason why I want to find out, so for you, you had that cushy, as you described it, that good life happening, the six-figure life. You got this mentorship that you had to invest in order to get into, which was the real estate side of things, right? Did you entirely step away from your six-figure job and jump into real estate? Or did you kind of side hustle until that started to take off, and then you were like, okay, I can step away from my sales job?
Great question. I side hustled from December of 07 until April of 08. And in that time was my trial period. I found myself spending more and more time in my side hustle and not focusing more time on my day job, what I was paid to do, but also because I wasn't motivated anymore. They already had screwed me over in commission three times, you know, changed my territories. I'm like, you know what? I guess this is about you and this is about me. And so I'm going to go and take care of me. And as I got into real estate and I learned more of the process and I learned how my own business experience, my own life, you know, I was only in my early 30s at the time. I realized, wow, how much that can translate into really moving the needle in this new business. And by April of 08, I was like, wow, this is my calling. I have found what I want to do. I can help other people. I can help my own family by doing this. And I walked away. And I remember, you know, this is funny. I went in there and, you know, as you know, you probably have to have a sales forecast presented before the next year. And mine was doing this and I didn't do it. I kept pushing it off. Then it was January and I kept pushing it off. Then it was February and I kept pushing it because I was doing real estate. And if it was an excuse to push it off, I pushed it. Well, finally, I couldn't push it off anymore. And that was April of 08. And my boss thought we were going to come in and do my performance forecast for 2008. And remember, I'm not motivated anymore. I'm just not motivated to put together a forecast because it doesn't matter what I put together. You're gonna tell me what I'm going to do. You're going to set the bar at whatever number you want to help me or not help me get to my number. So come April 8, my boss opens up his book. He's like, all right, I've been waiting to hear this, Robert. I've been waiting all year to hear this. I'm ready. And he starts to write down and I give him my resignation letter. And he's like, oh, okay. And he closes the book back again. He goes, tell me what's going on. By the time I was telling him what I was going to do, how I was going to chase my dream, it turned into a confessional. Literally, like, I'm a priest, and he's there telling me about he wishes he had a chance to pursue what he wanted to do. And I was like, wow, this is so great for you. I'm really happy for you. I'm actually envious. I wish I could be your age again. I wish I could, you know, pursue my goal. I wish I had the ability to walk away from this and, you know, and walk away from six figures and do this. And wow. And it made me think, well, how many other people are in this boat? So I knew that I was doing the right thing, right? Because it's the path that nobody goes down. It's the path you should go down, right? That's where the glory is. That's where the riches are. That's where the next level of you is going to be, is the path that's least traveled. And once I did that, go ahead.
No, I didn't want to interrupt you, but I think it's so powerful what you just brought up. And I definitely want to take a moment to talk about it, right? I think, and one of the reasons, Robert, you're on the show is because you're a dream catcher, right? Obviously, you've proven that time and time again. You are a dream catcher. You make stuff happen. You get the dream. You catch it, everything like that. I'm curious. You're having that conversation with your boss in 2008. He starts to confess to you and starts to say, ooh, I wish I was that age again. Man, I wish I could walk away from six figures. Man, I wish I could pursue my dreams like you're doing. What do you think truly, what do you think made the difference between you and your boss? Was it truly the fact that he was way older than you? He was making way more money and that was just the reason he couldn't step away and pursue his dream? Or what do you think the real reason was?
Because you're exactly right. He was 50 years old and I'm 34 at the time. And I told myself, now's the time. Because you know what? If you're a six-figure wage earner, you will always be a six-figure wage earner. But you'll never get time back. And I told myself, I can walk away. And if this doesn't work for whatever reason, it's okay. I'll go back and I'll land somewhere and I'll make six figures again. But this is my chance right now, age 34 years old, right now to do this. And if I can do this, it's going to change my family's life. If I do this and I commit to this, I'm going to do it. Look, I'm not the smartest guy in the room. I'm not. I'm just going to want it more than you. I am the guy that's going to want it more. I am the guy that's most loyal in the room. You know, I've got good intelligence, but I'm not in Mensa. You know, I don't have a 160 plus IQ, but what I have is a heart that if you were to measure my heart and maybe measure my emotional intelligence, it might be of that level because I do care about everybody else. My success comes that I've helped everybody else win. And I know that if I help them win, they're going to help me win, right? But you have to come to this realization in your life that that's the key to life, is helping others. When you would put and you help others first, then you'll start to see the real riches of life.
That's 100% true. Robert, I love that. I'm curious, why did you choose a close to 300 unit apartment unit versus a single family home? I want to hear that because I think I know the reason why.
Yeah.
But I definitely want you to tell our dream catchers why your first purchase that you made with real estate didn't happen to be a single family or even a duplex. It was a multi-unit apartment complex.
Right. Well, there's a couple of answers to that. And maybe it'll be one of the answers that you're thinking in your head. Number one, you know, that's what I thought. I joined that real estate club thinking I'm going to buy a rent house or two or three, and I'm going to make $300 to $400 a month cash flow each. And that's how I'm going to offset what my boss was taking from me, the $10,000, $20,000 that I probably thought I should have been making. But in reality, I'm just going slow. I know what I want to do. So why are you half-assing it? Why aren't you committing to it? And once I, and so the next day, that was Saturday's education, was all about single family houses. Once I realized that in apartments, it's a completely different valuation formula. In single family houses, you have a comparative analysis or a comparable analysis of other properties, other houses on your street or in the same zip code. In apartments, it's not like that. In apartments, your value is based on your NOI. The higher the rent is, the lower the expenses is your NOI. Rent minus expenses is NOI, net operating income. And the value of that net operating income is the value the bank associates with that. Mm-hmm. And you can make hundreds and millions of dollars on an investment deal if you move that needle. You can't on a single family house. You can add granite, you can add, you know, whatever high end finish, but it's only going to trade to whatever this value is in here. Mm-hmm. And apartments, you come in there, you get the rents up and you get the expenses down and you raise an NOI, you've now added millions and millions of dollars of valuation to that property. And once I saw how important sales was, it's not the engineers that bought, the true engineers. I'm not really a true engineer. I'm a sales guy at heart. It's not the accountants that succeed in real estate. It's not the engineers that succeed in real estate. It's the sales guys. It's the guys that can speak, the guys that can communicate, the guys that can find out what's important to you and make it important to them. And that's the value in multifamily apartments, is being able to move the NOI needle and create millions of dollars. And it doesn't happen if you don't understand how to move that needle. It's about renewing.
So in 2007, because you purchased your first apartment unit at the end of 2007, correct?
Right.
Okay. Did you own a home before that? Did you own any other real estate? Okay. So you did. So you had a single family unit.
That was my only real estate experience, was buying that house, going to the home builder showroom, picking some options I wanted, and becoming the homeowner.
Okay. That's so did it scare you at all?
I just did it. You know, I just did it. That's because so cool. It's, you know, you need to have something that you're shooting for, that you're dream catching. You got to have something bigger. And I wanted more. I had enough of corporate America. It had been 10 years since I graduated school and I was done. I wanted to have something new. I was married. She made six figures. So we're like, you know what? We're okay. We can do this. We're always living below our means. You know, we're able to do this. And I tell you, once I took one hit of real estate, I realized, oh my gosh, I can do so well with this that I wanted to keep going and going. It was the best decision I ever made. I now know a lot of rules on what helped me be successful. Number one, you have to be more doors is better. Because if you own one unit, two units, all it takes is one person not pay, you're at 0% occupancy. You have two units, one person to pay doesn't pay, you're at 50% occupancy. Mm-hmm, and guess what? You got to cover that. But when you got 238, 240, 300 units, you can afford to lose a few people and you can still make your bills. You can still have high occupancy if a few people leave. So people are like, well, you know, it's more risky. It's not. It's less risky because you got more, right? If you have it's a shotgun approach. You have all your eggs in this basket or you have all your eggs in 240 baskets. Right. And so that was number one. Number two, having a sales background helps. You know, I want to go back into the point about the Great Recession in 2008. So we got into that right before real estate crashed a year later.
That's right. That's exactly correct.
And you know, and I look at it as a huge feather in my cap, right? Because what kept me alive, what kept that business alive was my ability to sell, teach that ability to sell to my staff, and then take care of what I had, take care of the residents, right? Because there was no government bailouts. There was no assistance. There was no PPP for the essential employers or the small business or whoever. There was no government assistance. You were on your own, which is true capitalism. So it was a fight to the finish, hand to hand with everybody else. And those that are at best, those that have the best sales ability and the best cash reserves win. We got into that in 07. We had a full cash reserve. We had a renovation to do. We had a little bit extra money in our pocket, and you had the ability to sell. And, you know, we renovated a new property, right? So it was a new product again, and we sold. We were going up against everybody else that had bought in the last 10 years. And not everybody, their reserves are what their reserves were. And just like today, right, this virus is testing a few things. It's testing your liquidity and what you did when times were good. Really, and it's also testing your mental fortitude, right? Because this is crazy when you think about what we've done to this country for a handful of deaths. And I'm not being unsympathetic, but unemployment is 20%. That's not the death rate. The death rate is less than 1% for the whole country. But yet you shut down the economy, right? So the point is, but going back to the recession, what was that? There was no handouts. If you failed, and you died. And that's okay. That's capitalism. That's what's supposed to happen. It's supposed to be survival of the fittest. So we came in there, and it was a fight to the finish, and we put a lot of people, you know, into the dirt. But that's my sales background. I was a commissioned sales guy, which meant that if I didn't kill, I didn't eat tonight.
Yes. So
nothing had changed for me. So now if my family's gonna eat tonight, I need to make sure my staff knows how to kill. They know how to close that sale. They know how to get that person in there, and then more importantly, keep them in the business.
Absolutely.
And that's how we survive.
Absolutely. And Dreamcatchers, I want to touch on a couple things, right? Because Robert dropped some straight value, and I want you to hear this. The thing that made him be successful in the recession, and this is important for the time frame that we're in right now. One, he knew how to sell. He worked out, how do I figure out what you want and make it important to me so that I can then go ahead and sell you on what you're needing. He then went ahead and figured out how to teach back that same sales background to his team so that they learned, you've got to figure out from your client what they want, and then you're able to sell them what they need. And then lastly, and this is so, so powerful, he actually took care of his tenants. He took care of his clients to keep them in the doors rather than going to another apartment complex. And I think the thing that's powerful, and I love this, and I've got to quote you on this, Robert, is your recessions, your lean years, those are going to be the times that test you to see what were you doing in the good years. And we're going through that right now. Robert, when you look at, say, 2020 right now, right? Are you fearful of what's to come? Or are you excited because you see it as a time of opportunity?
I'm beyond excited because what I do as an apartment owner, there are two types of owners. There is an owner operator, a practitioner like myself, and there's a syndicator and a guy that puts deals together, raises equity, and hires somebody else. And that's what you're seeing. You're seeing what this syndicator did when times were good and what the operator did when times were good. And there's a
big explain the right two. Now. Yeah, explain the two for our audience.
I think the success of every good business owner is that he realizes times are not always going to be good.
Yes.
You know, I mentioned Grant Cardone earlier, but one of my other mentors I absolutely love, and I've got a chance. If you're doing your research on me, you'll know I love Gary Vaynerchuk.
Yeah.
I've got a chance to visit with him twice in his offices, the first time alone at a 4D meeting in 2017, the next time at the start of 2019, but I didn't come alone. I brought like six people with me. Right? Because I wanted him to hear what I heard. And in that call, he said to us, right, in 17 and 18, he said to me, find out what you're weak at and come up with a defense before somebody else exploits it.
Wow.
And then he quoted Netflix and he quoted Amazon. Netflix was in the boardroom of Blockbuster. If you remember what Blockbuster was?
Right? Yep.
And, yep. You know, and said, hey, everybody's going to go to online. Everybody's going to go to this fast food society. They want it either to drop in the mail and they can get it, or they can push a button and get it. Mm-hmm. And Blockbuster said, no, we think people like coming to our brick and mortar stores, paying rewind fees, and buying some popcorn and a Coke on the way out to have a Blockbuster night. Mm-hmm. They were foolish. And that billion-dollar business went under.
Yep.
Amazon did the same thing. They put Sears out of business. They put Toys R Us out of business. They put every one of those brick and mortar stores out of business because they did not expand their online capacity, their online ability. They didn't understand Uber. What did Uber do? The same thing. They put the taxi
yellow taxis
basically out of business, right? Because of the perception of time. It's all about time, right? And so Gary said to me, find a way to put yourself, what would be your weakness if people don't come to our store, if people don't come to our businesses, if they can't find us, if they don't know who we are? Because, and that's I took what he said and added to Grant Cardone, right? Grant Cardone says you have to promote it or you're demoting yourself. What is your brand? How are they going to find you? How do they know you exist? Everybody has a brand, just some more brands are well known than others. Right? Everybody has a brand. It's just how well known is your brand? And so I consider those my new mentors of the last 5 years, right? And I put their philosophies together and I said, hey, we have no online presence. Hey, we have no brand presence. If people come, if we're not open, people can't lease apartments from us.
Yeah, of course.
If we're not open, people can't pay their rent. If we're not open, people can't come in and renew. And we're like, shoot, this is a major weakness in our business. So for the last 36 months, first, I brought in somebody, a true marketing expert who had social media experience, who had search engine optimization experience, because I had none. My ability with market was mom and pop. I put pretty flags outside. I put pretty paint colors. I would renovate my properties and rely on resident referrals or drive by or word of mouth.
Okay.
And that doesn't work in 2020, right?
No.
So 3 years ago, 2017, 2018, we said we have a weakness in our business. And I brought in somebody first who came in here to help put us online. I didn't even have websites. I didn't have websites 4 years ago. She came on and she added websites on all of our properties. They added search engine optimization in it. And then I took what I learned from Gary. I said, okay, now we got to tell a story. I hired my first videographer full-time 3 months after I left that first meeting with Gary. And their job was to first tell our story as a community. Storytell. What is it like to live at our properties? What is it like to use our amenities? Meet our teams. Then it turned into like them following my journey, our journey to get to 10,000 units and the brand of the Apartment Rockstar. Because I have two audiences. I have the audience that is going to live with us in the future. And I have the audience I'm trying to capture who wants to invest with us in the future.
Yep.
It's a little bit of two animals. But today, because of what we did, we have not lost any velocity in our leasing capability. We've leased 170 units in the last 30 days. 70% of them have been online only. No social distancing required. What does that mean? That means they go to our website. First, they find us, right? They find us through our marketing ads that we have on the internet. Then they find our sites and they see videos all over of what it's like to live at one of our communities and what it's like to use our amenities and who our team is at. They're like, Then they find the reviews. Right? We're ranked among all property management companies in the entire country, number two nationally for resident satisfaction. We have pushed the shit out of resident renewals because what happened before, right? People buy from, if other people buy, that's just how it is. You go to Best Buy, you go wherever, you don't know what TV to buy. You go to Amazon, you write a review in and you buy what everybody else is buying. Or you buy what the salesman there says everybody's buying.
Yep.
Right? So we're like, okay. So review sites is like apartmentratings.com, which is a very common one in our industry, was considered a hate site. It was where 5 years ago, it's where everybody went to go complain about living at your place. And it's typically the people who are not paying their rent, who are getting evicted, who don't follow community standards, and they're getting evicted. As an apartment owner 5 years ago, we would put our heads in the sand like an ostrich and ignore it because we didn't understand how to combat that. Well, I wasn't thinking. The same place that they're going to vent are the same place that you can go and tell your story. So we took our storytelling and we took it to
that's phenomenal.
And we said, okay, hey, every time somebody rents a new apartment, aren't they excited? Why aren't you soliciting a review? Every time somebody renews, aren't they excited? Why aren't you soliciting a review? Why aren't you encouraging them to come in? So you drown out the hate. That review was posted last week, and now there's 20 new reviews that have pushed it down to page two because nobody goes to page two of Google, right? Well, nobody goes to page two of apartmentratings.com. So you push them down and you blow them up with the positivity. And we've done that. We're so well at it that we're number two ranked nationally. And the number one and the number two property in the entire country belongs to our company. And we only have 21 sites.
Robert, that's amazing. That's remarkable.
Units, and the big players have 100,000 units. But you see, it's all about adopting the strategies of today, the Grant Cardone strategy and the Gary Vaynerchuk strategy. And I guarantee you, in those top big companies, they don't have somebody that pays attention to what they're doing.
Absolutely.
That's what you got to do as a business owner. You got to find a way how to put yourself out of business and then come up with a defense against it. And that's how today we're winning. People can still.
And I want to say it's remarkable. It's absolutely remarkable that you have done 170 units in the last 30 days. Like that is remarkable. I'm curious, like when you are soliciting somebody who just leased your apartment or is renewing it, how do you get them to jump on the site and leave you a review?
Well, number one, that's the thing. You call back, right? Our teams are in the office where the door's locked. They have a lot of time.
Yeah, right? Of course.
Renewals are through the roof. Why are renewals through the roof? Because my team isn't leasing on the front end anymore. The leasing has gone to online. 70% of those 170 units is online. That means they're going through the whole registration process. They're finding us online. They're paying their application, their deposit online. They're doing their employment verification check online. And all they're doing is showing up on their day of arrival and getting the key. And soon we're going to fix that towards smart home only, where they actually get a code and they can use that code to get into their
house. That's awesome. That's really cool.
And then they can change the code. It's coming.
That is so cool.
It's coming. You have to understand, anything that saves time has value. Anything that saves time makes money. And if it makes money for you, you better learn how to make money.
Mm.
You better learn before somebody else puts you out of business.
Absolutely. And that takes us back to the original question. You were talking to me about the difference between the syndicate and the owner operator and the difference, because you were saying that you're extremely excited with where things are at right now. And you were explaining the reason why you're extremely excited as well. What makes the difference between the syndicate, who's making the deals or whatever, and the owner operator?
Because their motivation is different.
Huh.
A syndicator is motivated differently than an owner operator. A syndicator is motivated by fees. He's motivated by generating $10 million investor equity, charging an acquisition fee, mm-hmm. and then charging the fee to manage the money. Then he hires a third-party company to hire your money for you. He has no skin in the game. He's just a middleman between you and owning the investment. Apartments are hot. Everybody knows that. And so they're trying to find a way to get into it. Owner-operator, my money's in that game. My mama's money's in that game. My friend's money's in that game. A lot of people that are very dear to me are in that game. And when I sign on that note, and it's a recourse note, not a Fannie Mae note, that means my kid's money, my kid's neck is on the line.
Hmm.
And when that happens, you change your motivation. You know, you make sure that you guard that with your life. You know, I don't have any other motivations in this world. My motivation is to make money for my investors and my deals. I don't own a third business, a second business. I could. There's a lot of ways to make money in the apartment world selling to yourself. And I choose not to do that. I don't want to. I'm going to make my money the right way. And it's by taking care of my residents, taking care of the residents, which takes care of the investors. And it's why I think I'm the only two-time national independent owner of the year, because my thought process is different. I'm not motivated by the fee. I'll make my money at the end. I don't need to make my money now. I don't need to make the money and walk away from it. That's my reputation. And my company is everything to me. If it wasn't, I wouldn't care about resident satisfaction. I would care about fees. I would be the largest syndicate guy in the country if that was my motivation, but it's not. My motivation is taking care of my residents, which is taking care of my investors, which is why I'm the best operator in the country, because that's where my motivation is at.
That's awesome, Robert. And that goes back to what you were talking about earlier, and I wrote it down. You were saying that I'll win no matter what, because I just want it more than the other guy.
100% true. And it's not that I just want, and when you know that, you take it to the next level. I'm going to win no matter what, because I want it more than the other guy, but I want my team to win too.
Yes.
I refuse to get to the top of the mountain, be there, plant the flag, and have no one to share stories with. I can't go to my friend, Melissa or Sam or Natalie or Rosie and say, hey, remember back in 2020 Corona? Jeez, I can't believe that actually happened. I can't believe the whole country was fooled with that. But remember how we didn't go under? Remember how well we were doing? Right now, our companies have 6 months reserves across the board. We have a PPP loan that we applied at 5 o'clock on the first day. We were not denied. We got that money in. We are set to survive this. We're set to grow and prosper through this when it's over too, because my staff will be there. Not a single person of my company will be without a job over the next 60 to 90 days however long this lasts. You just got to keep thinking. You got to this virus tested your liquidity and what you did when times were good and your mental fortitude.
So for somebody that is listening to you right now, who is, maybe they were a daydreamer, or they used to just, they used to think the W-2s were the best, and they were more like your boss, where your boss was saying, man, Robert, I wish I could be you. I wish I could go out and chase my dreams. And they're going through the coronavirus right now, and they're looking at this season and they're going, Robert, I don't know what to do. How would you say for them to begin to prepare in this season, and what should they start doing right now to help them get one step closer to their dreams?
I think number one thing you should do is analyze, who are you at your heart? Are you the accountant? Are you the engineer? Or are you the sales guy? Because they're all important in the business. Mm. Number one, if you're not the sales guy, find you the sales guy. Mm-hmm. Partner up, because chances are you're good at something else.
Yeah,
my number two in the business is not a salesperson. She's very good at implementing, but she's not the sales guy.
Mm.
But she's the organizational guy. Mm-hmm. That's who she is. She keeps us straight. My other number two is my finance guy, my numbers guy. He's my counterbalance to my craziness as a sales guy, right? and all three are important.
Yes,
they're all important. So use this time. If you don't have the answer, it means you're probably not the sales guy.
Mm.
So go find you the sales guy that has those kind of dreams, and you become the organizer, and you figure it out, and you learn from each other. Right?
That's beautiful.
Because the two-headed monster will work if there is a start and an end. I don't believe in long-term partnerships, because I've been through a partnership, and what happens is one person's stack is bigger than the other eventually. There's no 50-50. They do this, you do this, and that's great. Right, and that's a true partnership when there's true value, but it will eventually change because everybody evolves differently. And this sales guy will learn how to be more organized eventually. Or the organization guy may learn how to be a better sales guy, but I don't think so. I think sales is inherent in you. You're wired that way from whatever the reason, mom and dad, your upbringing, whatever. You're wired, right? If the sales guy learns the organization stuff, he is unstoppable. Mm-hmm. So if you're not the sales guy, that's okay. Find you the sales guy, but you better learn what he does, because he's going to for sure learn what you do, because he's constantly thinking about moving forward.
Mm.
He's not kicking tires, right? He's moving forward. He's going to buy that car, right? And he's going to get in that car, and he's going to go down the road. And I think that's the difference. You just got to find what you're weak at and outsource that to somebody else and then move along. Double down on what you're good at.
I love that. I love that. And Dreamcatchers, I want you to catch this, right? Because if you look back at Robert's story, right? In 2007, 2008, he purchases his first apartment complex outside of the home that he already owned, right? And now you're looking at 2020, where he has learned from his mentors, looked at, what am I weak at? How do I improve on that? And you have to understand this, Dreamcatchers. The reason I asked him the question of what should you start doing now is we go through seasons. We go up, we go down. We go up, we go down. We go through seasons. And this 2020 coronavirus quarantine is not going to be the last time that we ebb and flow through the good years and the lean years. So what you do right now, just like Robert was talking about, figure out what you do well at, double down on it. And if you can figure out what you're weak at, you can find somebody who you can partner with, who can help you and help you get through this as well. Robert, go ahead.
I want to add to that is that you don't have to have that answer today. Because government has come in and they're extending the death of somebody. They're kicking the can down the road for businesses to go out of business. So you don't have to have that answer today. Your job today is to find your counterbalance, right? You're strong here, you're weak here, counterbalance it out. You're strong here, you're weak here, counterbalance it out. Find your counterbalance. You have 6-12 months to do it. And the 12-month mark from right now is when you'll start to see those businesses go under. 90% of all restaurants went out of business the first week of the coronavirus. Why? Because they weren't prepared. Their liquidity wasn't there, and they can't stay on. Hell, the other day, Saks Fifth Avenue said, we're going to declare bankruptcy.
Mm.
They couldn't buy. They were already in a weak position. So the first ones to die will be the weakest companies. Mm. But they'll be the companies that don't get any assistance first. Wait. Get your cash ready to go. Find your partner, find your equity, whatever it is, and be ready. In 6-12 months is when the buying opportunity will occur. And it won't be as great as the Great Recession. It's just not going to be, because government kicked in too much money in there. They didn't do that before. They didn't bail out the little man. This time they bailed out the little man, which means more small businesses are able to kick the can down the road, which buys them time. Some will figure out what they need to do during that time. Some won't. During the recession, nobody got bailed out. Unless you were a big bank or the airlines, you didn't get bailed out. And in fact, this time, the presidential administration said, if we buy your airline, we're taking a piece of your company too. Which makes you think, oh, wow, this is not a free ride like it was during the Great Recession. So you may not take that loan, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And so,
mm-hmm. Yeah, and that's powerful. Dreamcatchers, I want you to go back and rewind that, because that's powerful advice that Robert just gave you. You need to be getting prepared now, because you've got 6 to 12 months before you need to make a move. Robert, last two questions for you. Obviously, our dream catchers need to follow you. They need to see your journey. They even need to, if you guys are interested in the real estate game and like what that looks like some of the advice that Robert gives on social media is remarkable, like absolutely remarkable, talking about amenities and how to get renewals and all of that sort of stuff. So I'd highly recommend going ahead and connecting with Robert. Where is the best place, Robert, for them to go ahead and find you, see your story, hear from you, hear your advice?
Well, first of all, if you've been listening this far, thank you for listening this far. I really appreciate it. It means I've added some sort of value to you. And if you want to continue with that value, I would love a relationship with you. Please, number one, follow me on Instagram at Apartment Rockstar. As John said, I have a ton of business ideas and tips that I use in my business, but the principle is the same. You can apply it towards your business or your life. First, start with the Instagram. If you want to read more in-depth content, we write full-on articles on LinkedIn at Robert Martinez, or if you just want to be my friend and follow me on Facebook, you can go to Robert Martinez on Facebook.
That's awesome. Robert, last question for you. Obviously, I'm excited to hear this one. If you were to bump into yourself 10 years younger, okay, and you could only give one piece of advice, what would that piece of advice be?
Trust yourself and go a little quicker.
Huh.
You don't need a partner. You can do this. You have it in you. Push through this. You're smarter than what you think you are. You have more heart than what you think you are. And in the end, what's going to make you different than everybody else is that you're going to want it more. So trust in what you are, trust in who you are and what's in your head, and just follow your heart, and it'll never lead you wrong.
I love that piece of advice. I'm curious. I know I said last two questions, but I'm curious. Robert, why did you not trust yourself?
Fear of what everybody else put in your head and me believing it. That's why I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust myself. I didn't believe that I could do it. I finally had to say, you know what? Now's the time. I'm 33, 34 years old. Here's my chance to follow my dream. Here's my chance to trust myself. I think I've underachieved my entire life. And I think that if I had not given into fear, and fear is given to you from mom and dad, friends, whatever, especially when you're doing something different. You know, when I joined in that real estate club, I walked in there with a buddy, and that buddy and I were going to buy apartments together, single family houses together. And in the end, he didn't want to pay the $10,000 to join the club. And I was like, well, you know what? I think it's worth it. I'm going to do it. He goes, no, I can do it by myself. So he went and bought his single family house all by himself, made a ton of mistakes that he would not have made, and made very little money a year later when he finally sold it. I, in turn, trusted myself, spent that money, and created a career to where now I run a $380 million portfolio, you know, 13 years later. And he's still my friend today, and I just wonder how different his life would have been, right? But that was the difference. I was the sales guy. He was more of the finance numbers guy. So he was wired a little differently. I think it doesn't matter. I think you just got to go and go out there and reach. Don't overanalyze, analysis, paralysis. You've heard all of that. Just do it. Just do it and worry about how you're going to make it work later. Just do it. Create the problem that you have of how am I going to do this now, and you'll figure it out.
Robert, I want to say thank you so much for jumping on the show today. Dreamcatchers, if your notebook doesn't look like my notebook, I got so much value out of this, Robert. And I just want to say thank you again for jumping on the show. I knew I was going to enjoy this episode, but I've thoroughly gotten some value out of it. Thank you again.
John, thanks so much. I tell you what, this has been a thoroughly incredible experience. You're very good at what you do. You're very good at keeping the conversation going. It was very easy to chat with you. Thanks so much for allowing me to share my story.
Robert, why did you not trust yourself?
Fear of what everybody else put in your head and me believing it. That's why I didn't trust myself. I didn't trust myself. I didn't believe that I could do it. I finally had to say, you know what? Now's the time. I'm 33, 34 years old. Here's my chance to follow my dream. Here's my chance to trust myself. I think I've underachieved my entire life. And I think that if I had not given into fear, and fear is given to you from mom and dad, friends, whatever, especially when you're doing something different. You know, when I joined in that real estate club, I walked in there with a buddy. And that buddy and I were going to buy apartments together, single family houses together. And in the end, he didn't want to pay the $10,000 to join the club. And I was like, well, you know what? I think it's worth it. I'm going to do it. He goes, no, I can do it by myself. So he went and bought his single family house all by himself, made a ton of mistakes that he would not have made, and made very little money a year later when he finally sold it. I, in turn, trusted myself, spent that money, and created a career to where now I run a $380 million portfolio, you know, 13 years later. And he's still my friend today. And I just wonder how different his life would have been, right? But that was the difference. I was the sales guy. He was more of the finance numbers guy. So he was wide load differently. I think it doesn't matter. I think you just got to go and go out there and reach. Don't overanalyze, analysis, paralysis. You've heard all of that. Just do it. Just do it and worry about how you're going to make it work later. Just do it. Create the problem that you have of how am I going to do this now? And you'll figure it out.
Robert, I want to say thank you so much for jumping on the show today. Dreamcatchers, if your notebook doesn't look like my notebook, I got so much value out of this, Robert. And I just want to say thank you again for jumping on the show. I knew I was going to enjoy this episode, but I've thoroughly gotten some value out of it. Thank you again.
John, thanks so much. I tell you what, this has been a thoroughly incredible experience. You're very good at what you do. You're very good at keeping the conversation going. It was very easy to chat with you. Thanks so much for allowing me to share my story.
Absolutely. And Dreamcatchers, here's what I want you to do for me. Okay. Obviously, I already know you're subscribed to the show. You've already gone ahead and left a 5-star review. So I already know all of that. What I want you to go do is I want you to go ahead and give Robert some love. Like go over Facebook, go to LinkedIn, go to Instagram. All that stuff's going to be in the show notes. So give him some love. Let him know that you checked out this episode. And obviously, I'm going to be going ahead and tuning in even more to Robert's story. You need to be doing the same. But more importantly, I want you to do this as well. If this episode right here brought you value, I want you to take it and I want you to find another dream catcher. And I want you to share this episode with them. Let them know why it brought you value and why you think it's going to bring them. Guys, we'll see you on the next episode.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Apartment Rockstar Podcast. If you want to learn more about Robert Martinez, feel free to go to www.theapartmentrockstar.com. Follow him on Instagram at Apartment Rockstar. Connect through LinkedIn at Robert Martinez. If you're interested in apartment investing through Rockstar Capital, go to investors.rockstarcapital.com. This has been a production of Rockstar Capital.